Welcome to Why So Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us on this holiday weekend. On today's program, poet Eric Blanchard pays a visit to Conrad's Corner, and Dan Patterson recounts the story of the first airplane factory in Dayton, Ohio. Up first, Angie Hoshower is the program manager with Radio Reading Services for Goodwill Easter Seals Miami Valley. I spoke with her this week about the work they're providing for a thankful audience of listeners.
Well, we've had the program since about 2004. Prior to that, it was called Words, which a lot of people may remember. But we combined our forces, and Goodwill Easter Seals has taken over the program. And what we do is we provide a service for those that have visual impairment, as well as those that have a physical or developmental disability that they may not be able to access or read the newspapers. And we do that for them over specialized radio.
And how many people do you serve? And give us the scope of the area.
We currently serve over 10 counties in the Miami Valley, and we know that we have a little over 600 listeners currently that we are in touch with. So actually, we're doing surveys right now and going through our old database to try to find out exactly how many listeners and who still has a radio that may have fallen off of our database list. We do broadcast over three Miami Valley radio stations, and we broadcast on their subcarrier frequencies. So you have to have a specialized radio that you have to get from us that you then can pick up our signal and in our broadcast.
What is the process for receiving one of those radios? Just simply contacting Goodwill?
Absolutely. You can give me a call at 937-528-6525, and you can we can get an application filled out over the phone. We can mail you an application. You can go to our website at GESMV.org, which is the first letter of Goodwill Easter Seals Miami Valley. You can get an application online. So there's lots of ways to get that, but I would just say to give me a call at, again, 937-528-6525. It takes about 3 minutes to get the application over the phone. I just want to know where I'm sending a radio to. And then we'll get one sent out to you with a program schedule, and you can begin listening the day that you receive it.
I'd like to talk about some of the details on the program schedule, because I'm really interested in the scope of what you present to your listeners. You have original content and content generated through other media sources.
That is true. We start live broadcast at 8 a.m. in the morning, and we are reading Dayton Daily News, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, are our staple papers from 8 a.m. until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We break that down to hard news, sports, obits, op-ed pages, lifestyle and entertainment. We read 1 hour of the Wall Street Journal. From there, we go into some regional newspapers. So we are reading the East papers, which is Springfield, Xenia, and Fairborn, the North papers, Greenville, Troy, Pickwa, Sydney, the Times Community papers, which are, you know, the South papers, Springboro, Centerville, Bellbrook, Beaver Creek, Kettering, Oakwood, and then the North papers, which are Inglewood Independent and Vandalia and Huber Heights Courier, as well as the Weekly Record Herald, which services West Milton, Tipp City, and Bethel Township.
We talked about your coverage area, which is 10 counties, and I want to talk about some of the challenges you're facing with coverage and operating on sub-frequencies and dependent on other radio stations.
Yeah, absolutely. We are so grateful to WDPR, which is 88.1, your classical station in Dayton. They have been partnering with us for quite some time. We use a subcarrier frequency of their station. And then they also have a sister station, WDPG, which is 89.9. Their tower is out in Greenville. So with those two stations, we broadcast in Dart County, Miami County, Shelby County, Montgomery County, parts of Preble County as well. And then we partnered with, back in the day, another radio station, which is now 90.3 KLOV, KWKCD, out in Cedarville. And so that gave us coverage area in Clark County, and as well as Greene County and lower parts of Clinton County, down to Lebanon, Warren County, and Middletown and Butler County. So, you know, we do have this huge territory. But the radios operate on a subcarrier frequency, which means they're at run about 30% of power of a normal normal radio station. You cannot pick it up in your car or home radio. You must get a specialized radio from us based on the territory that you live in. And so the challenges are that because it's at a subcarrier frequency, it needs to be moved around your house. It works great in my kitchen, but I take the radio to my bedroom and I get nothing but static. So we do public service announcements to let our folks know, hey, if you're experiencing static, you know, you may need to move the antenna or move the radio to an outside wall, which picks up, you know, the radio station the best. It's like everything, you know, it's a great service. There are pockets in the community that we know there are challenges. There's like a little black hole in Clayton and a little spot in Springfield that no matter what we've done or what we do, we just can't seem to get our station to pick up there. But otherwise, you know, for the most part, it is a great service. We are serving 10 counties. We're serving, you know, over 600 people. And we've been doing this for 25 plus years. And it's just a really good program for those that cannot access a newspaper to their daily community. What happens in the newspaper, the things that you see on television, you get a 30-second snippet, but you know, you really get an in-depth article and more understanding to what's going on and all that little community news that's really important to people that are living there.
So all of this takes a lot of coordination, which is another thing that is quite interesting about your operation here. Tell me how that is accomplished.
We have 4 staff members. 1 is full-time and 3 are part-time. And outside of that, it's all volunteer-driven. We have over 90 volunteers that come in and read 59 minutes and 30 seconds. We have like a 30-second station break at the top of the hour. We'll give some announcements. But for the most part, 90 volunteers are coming in and reading live and or recorded material. So during the week, Monday through Friday, and including Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon, we are live. And then the rest of the day, we have recorded programs. So we are reading recorded materials such as Christian Science Monitor, Time Magazine, Newsweek, People, Better Homes and Gardens, Cooking with Paula Deen, pet shows. We have a travel show. We have Reminisce. We have Miami Valley History. We have Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine, The Jewish Observer, the Catholic Telegraph. You name it, we're probably reading it. And if we're not, then you just have to let us know what you want to hear and we'll get it on the air for you.
Let's talk about the typical volunteer who offers their time and energy to help provide this service.
We love our volunteers. They are varied. I have a law student at University of Dayton. And then I also have, you know, those volunteers that are retired that just want to still be active and they enjoy reading and they enjoy reading out loud. So, and it's easy. You can become a volunteer. If you're out there listening and you want to be a volunteer, just give our volunteer manager a call. Her name is Marty Odell. And her phone number is 937-528-6371. We also have a volunteer application and more information about volunteering on our website, again, at gesmv.org, which is the Goodwill Easter Seals website. But there's a volunteer place, and you can read about, you know, what it takes. And basically, if you can give us a 59 minutes and 30 seconds of your time to read live or recorded on the radio, for all of you closeted DJs out there, we'd love to have you come in. We'll teach you, you know, what to do. We'll prepare the newspapers for you. We ask that you come in about 20 minutes prior to review your material so you're familiar with what you're going to be reading on air so you don't stumble over names or whatnot. But hey, this is live and recorded radio. Everybody stumbles, everybody makes mistakes, and that's all right. We're all human, and you're just reading to somebody. So if you look at it that way and don't think, how many people are out there and how many people am I talking to, just think of it as grandma or your aunt that you're reading the newspaper or mail to so that, you know, they could stay informed and be a part of their community still.
More of our interview with Angie Hoshower coming up, but first we want to focus a little bit more on the volunteers that contribute their time and energy to the radio reading service.
We spoke with musicians, choreographers, and filmmakers who collaborated with Jackson on Bad.
During my visit, volunteer Tony Coleman was reading the lifestyle and entertainment news from the Dayton Daily News and USA Today. Listeners were able to hear a story about Michael Jackson.
Footage of Jackson and commentary from stars who were influenced by him, among them Mariah Carey.
Just down the hall, Nelson Barksdale of Centerville was going over the material he was about to present. Nelson usually does a sportscast on Fridays, but today he's reading from a different page.
They want to know who died, but they may know. It's not the one I really enjoy doing the most, but it's we do it for their benefit. We're helping people out, and that's the good thing.
And what brought you here?
I retired last year, April the 11th, 2011, and I wanted something to do. And a very good friend of mine, his father, Ryan Ruiz from Centerville, from Incarnation Church over in Centerville. I talked to him. I said, you know, there's limited things I can do, having lost a leg 10 years ago. And he said, well, Nels, you've got a great voice. You do a lot of work for us over here, speaking engagements. Why don't you – there's a place that I know of down at Goodwill. They have a radio station. Have you ever tried that? I said, no. So I came down here, applied, and lo and behold, here I am. I've been – I think I'm on my 185th show right now. It's enjoyable. It's a great station. It's great things we do with the blind and the sight impaired. It really helps them out. But it's a heck of a lot of fun. It's good to be with them, and we do some good out there.
And how about your experience with Goodwill or the people at Radio Reading Services? Do they make it easy for you?
Frankly, they're the nicest people I ever worked with in my life. I'm used to management. I spent 42 years in it, and this is a lot better, believe me. It's a lot of fun. Everybody down here smiles. That's nice to see. And it's just a great place to be.
Any final comments for us?
It'd be a lot of fun to have more people on the air.
So you definitely see the need for more volunteers here?
Absolutely.
Nelson Barksdale of Centerville, thanks for speaking with us.
Glad to. Thanks a lot for having me.
Volunteers like Tony Coleman and Nelson Barksdale are integral to the Radio Reading Service program, and Angie Hoshower says listeners are thankful for their work.
Oh, they are so appreciative. They tell us all the time how much they appreciate what Goodwill Easter Seals does, how they appreciate the program. It's been around for 25-plus years. It's been with Goodwill for 8-plus years. So we're very excited to bring that to them. You know, a lot of them have the low vision, macular degeneration and cataracts and things like that, that prevents them from being able to read daily the newsprint, which is so small. And even USA Today has gotten smaller, if you've picked up that recently. But a lot of them say that they have to use a magnifier to read the newspaper, which can be very difficult and very straining on your eyes. So if they can just sit back and listen to somebody else reading the program to them or the material to them, that's so much more relaxing, and they, you know, get in tune to when one sense goes out, another sense picks up. So their hearing becomes more acute and they're able to listen better and to, you know, pick up the information. So it's really a good program for those that have a visual impairment. And again, we service a lot of people. Our average listener is 85 plus. So we have listeners as young as in their 30s.
So let's talk a little bit about funding for Goodwill Easter Seals and this portion and your services specifically, if we can.
The funding sources that we have are few and far between, as like most nonprofit organizations. We did just receive a generous grant from the Dayton Foundation, but that's to upgrade all of our equipment because some of the equipment that we have here is you know, 10, 15 years old. So we're going to upgrade our equipment, which will then give us a better quality of broadcast. The radios that we provide are free of charge. So when you apply for the radio, there's no cost to have the radio. We send it to you, and you can keep it for as long as you need it. Now, we do ask that it does come back to us if you no longer need the radio, but we do try to get recoup the radios back, but sometimes, you know, it's at a loss for us. The radios do cost us about $25 each. So, you know, we are looking to do fundraising campaigns and things like that. We try to have, if you would like to sponsor the radio reading service, you can. As a business, you can say, I'd like to have my name read several times during the day. You know, this program is provided to you by so-so-so. We would certainly appreciate that. But for the most part, this is a public service and a program service provided by Goodwill Easter Seals free of charge to those that need it.
I'm speaking with Angie Hoshower. Angie is the Radio Reading Service Program Manager. Angie, are there other ways that people can help? We've talked about reading volunteers and also the availability for small businesses to underwrite with reading services. Again, are there other ways that people can help?
Absolutely. You know, this program wouldn't be available to people without the generous support of the community. So if you know of somebody that was visually impaired or is visually impaired and can use this service, we certainly take, you know, a general monetary donation, and you can send that into Radio Reading Service at Goodwill Easter Seals. And if you're interested, it's 1511 Coons Road, Dayton, Ohio, 45404. But you can also donate online. You can designate it to a specific program, or you can send it to the general fund of Goodwill Easter Seals, which helps support over 40 programs and services in the community.
Angie Hoshower with Radio Reading Services, Goodwill Easter Seals, Miami Valley. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
And again, you can get more information about the Radio Reading Services at gesmv.org. You're listening to WISO Weekend on WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks again for joining us this holiday weekend. On November 22, 1909, a company was incorporated that would eventually become the first airplane factory in Dayton, Ohio. It was called the Wright Company. Local aviation photographer and historian Dan Patterson tells us the story.
Last time we spoke, I described the momentous flight Wilbur Wright made in New York City in 1909, when a million New Yorkers saw an airplane fly for the first time. One of those millions called on Wilbur later that day at the Park Hotel in Manhattan. Clinton Peterkin, 25 years old, was an entrepreneur. He had been an office boy for J.P. Morgan, an American financial giant. Peterkin told Wilbur that he wanted to form a company to build airplanes. Wilbur was friendly but kept him somewhat at arm's length, told him that he and Orville were only interested in what he called men of consequence. He said that they wanted names that carried weight. Peterkin went to J.P. Morgan directly, and he signed on. Within weeks, he also had Cornelius Vanderbilt on board, and eventually a board of directors that represented two steel companies, two railroads, the New York subway system, the New York Giants, and Collier's Weekly Magazine. On November 22, 1909, the Wright Company was incorporated with a capital stock issue of $1 million. The idea was that the Wrights would continue their flying experiments and the new managers would run the business. The owners built a factory 1 mile from the West 3rd Street neighborhood where the Wrights lived. It was the first airplane factory in the United States and opened for business in November 1910. A second, identical building came soon thereafter. The Wright Company built the Model B airplane. Wings, struts, propellers, chains, and motors. Lots of women were employed to sew the fabric that covered the wings. Inside, the factory was full of natural daylight. Skylights and huge windows ensured that. Years later, the buildings were occupied by Inland Manufacturing, part of General Motors, where they built automobile parts. And during World War II, they made guns. My dad, who served in that war, was issued an Inland Manufactured carbine in basic training. Now, 100 years after they were built, the Wright Company factory buildings at the corner of Home Avenue and West 3rd Street will be included in the Dayton National Aviation Historical Park. I had a chance to walk through the other day. The huge windows on the outside walls are now covered, some with brick and some with plywood. Inland changed the buildings, but they will be restored. The original concrete floor remains, and many tantalizing hints of the original structure, too. It's easy to imagine the cornfields that once grew across the street. Only 120 airplanes ever came out of that factory. 2 years after manufacturing began, Wilbur died. Orville was devastated. His brother, his partner, and the other half of the genius was gone. And then in 1915, Orville sold the Wright Company, and he became the grand old man of aviation, forever known as an inventor and the pilot of the first powered airplane. For WYSO, this is Dan Patterson wishing you blue skies and tailwinds.
Dan Patterson is a Dayton aviation photographer and historian. To see archival photos of the Wright Company factory, visit our website, wyso.org. Support for aviation programming on WYSO comes from the National Aviation Heritage Alliance. Coming up next on WYSO Weekend, poet Eric Blanchard sits down with our very own Conrad Balliot.
welcome to Conrad's Corner. From time to time, I do interviews. My guest today is Eric Blanchard from Dayton. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Conrad. It's good to be here.
Yes, and how about a brief biography of you? Where do you come from? What do you do?
Okay, well, I'm from Texas. I was born in Houston, and I practiced law in Houston for about 15 years. I moved to Dayton probably about 2 years ago. I've been active in the writing community and poetry community here in Dayton ever since I moved here.
And what do you mean by active in the writing community?
Well, I first started going to poetry readings, and I found out about some poetry contests, and I entered them. And I received a scholarship to go to Antioch Writers Workshop last year in 2011. I've started being involved with poetry groups and writing groups in general.
And you belong to a writing group?
Yes, I belong to a writing group called Write Library Poets, and we meet every third Tuesday in the month at the Starbucks in Oakwood on Far Hills. It's open to the public. We meet at 7 o'clock, and we just bring up poets and share and get critiques and talk about poetry.
And I think another poet that I read on WISO is also a member of that group.
Yes, Elizabeth Smith. She works at the Wright Library, and she and I started the group with a gentleman named Wes Bishop, who moved to Indiana. But now we have regular 6-7 people come.
Okay. And what kind of poetry do you write?
Oh, mainly free verse. I don't have a real style. I just write what comes to me. I'm even, you know, starting to do prose poetry, which I never thought I'd do before.
And you said whatever comes to you. Where does it come from?
Sometimes I just get inspired by something that I'm reading or something that I hear, a news item or some comment. Sometimes it's just a phrase.
Would you call it inspiration, or is it just something that occurs coincidentally?
Well, I think it's more closer to being found poetry, except it's maybe just the first line of a poem, and then I go from there.
And where do you find it?
Oh, all over the place. I just, you know, it just finds me, I think. Often do in April, there's people that do poetry challenges. They try to write a poem a day every day of April. And I started doing that a few years back. And I write almost every day. I do write every day. Some poems aren't very good.
Once you write it, then does it take a lot of revision?
I generally don't do a lot of revision. Oftentimes, the good poems come out almost complete. I do a lot of revision on the bad poems to try to make them good poems, I guess. But I have been revising a lot lately because I am part of this poetry group and I have people giving me feedback. It makes a big difference of how I write.
Good. You mentioned a poem a day. I have one of the local poets, Janiel Ravindahl, has been doing a sonnet a day every day this year. She's somewhere over 200.
Wow.
That's quite an achievement.
And sonnets are not easy to write.
But even one a day is a worthwhile achievement. We've been talking about them. I would like to hear one or two or three. Do you have some to read?
I do. I brought a couple. I will start, I think, with a poem that was published in magazine before I left Texas called Borderlands. It's a Texas Poetry Review, and this is called Sweet Tea. The Mexican hibiscus grows wild and unruly and bright green before it spurts flowers like blood. The policeman thought it was pot because the leaves looked vicious and the neighbors were smiling. He got tangled up in the scent and confusion. He tried to cut it down, but he could not repossess it. It makes sweet tea just the same as though it were the weed it is, wild and unruly and green, with flowers like blood.
Now, is that an autobiographical poem? Is that something that happened?
There's a story behind that one. My mother gave a hibiscus plant to a friend of hers. Her friend kept calling her and said, "The police are here. What type of hibiscus is that?" Because they thought it was marijuana. So it's not a Mexican hibiscus. I'm not sure what kind of hibiscus it was. But
good story and good poem.
Yeah.
How about another one?
Okay. Next one I'll read is so I can feel. Do not give me love, for love is hard to hold on to. Give me a lover instead, so I can revel in her touch and taste her lemon skin. Give me sweat dripping from her curves and the scent. Give me the tangled limbs and the screaming. Give me the gentle, the butterfly kisses and the sighs, so I can feel like I have had a lover after the spinning and the rinsing of linen in the morning when I am alone.
I don't know if I should ask about autobiography there or not.
No, that one actually isn't.
Yeah, purely imagination.
Except for, you know, imagine, yeah.
Except what?
Except for the imagination. I think it's a universal poem with people having, you know, trouble finding relationships and stuff.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, actually. I think it's a fairly common experience. And one more?
I think I'll read Frost on the Ocean. I think most people are familiar with Frost, A Road Less Traveled, and I owe this poem to Robert Frost. I think you'll recognize it. Frost on the Ocean. 100 or so paths diverged on a great green ocean, and looking up toward the heavens, I saw 1,000 more crisscrossing the sky. Above those were spread at least 1,000,000 other paths, playful and sunbent, lightly testing the exosphere. As I stood, pondering whether to swim or fly or orbit the earth chasing starlight, my cortex went numb. Frozen at the crossroad on a brimless sea, I did nothing. That certainly has made a difference.
I think we have time for one more poem. You have one there about poetry.
Okay, I'll read Publish Me. This is one of the first poems I actually got published, and maybe it worked. Publish me. Wrap me in your critic's arms. Edit me only slightly. Roll me into full-colored glossy. Treat me newspaper cheap. Spread my tender lines. Taste my imagery. I am an easy poem. Publish me.
Thank you, Eric. I think you have a good sense of humor and a good poetic touch. And one a day is quite an achievement.
Thank you, Conrad. It is sometimes work and sometimes play.
Eric Blanchard.
Mrs. Bill Felker was Poor Will's almanac for the third week of late fall. More than one naturalist has noted the similarities in March and November. Even nature seems confused throughout late autumn, encouraging new growth, a kind of second spring, as if there would be no winter interruption of that cycle. Protected in the swamp near my village, watercress brightens as though April were only a month or so away. Dock and ragwort grow back beside the dead field grasses. Waterleaf is filling up the bottomlands again. Celandine is blooming in a few dandelions, some chickweed, some violets too. Seeds sprout in rotting logs. Skunk cabbage has already pushed to the surface and it's ready to flower if December is warm. Riding leisurely south, you can still find early October, catching up with the best of leaf turn in Arkansas. Along the Gulf Coast, the trees still hold their leaves and colors haven't even reached their peak. And by the time the frost reaches New Orleans, it will be just about time for it to recede from the north. By the time the very last leaves fall in Chicago in December, the first leaves of the new year will be emerging in Florida. March and November are, in fact, not so far apart as they appear. Paper calendars measure time in just one way, the linear way of human history. There is another kind of time, of course, one more metronomic and more tidal, one in which the same matter, pushed and pulled by the moon, advances and retreats. In that rhythm, the seasons are stripped of their Gregorian sequence. Those seasons do not compute the limited span of our lives, They are not confined by space, and they have no meaningful borders. All of their successions are reversible and illusory, metaphoric and prophetic. Their commencements are their closures. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fourth week of late fall. In the meantime, look closely. It's almost spring.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WISO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. You can also find us at WYSO.org. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.